Dan.
And Dave.
Oh, and Arthur.
Arthur joining us by Skype.
Hold up a second. I actually got a jingle for this.
You do? Fine.
Guest podcast. See?
That's terrible. It's
fucking amazing.
It's even worse.
You can fix it up in post-production.
No, that's it done.
Yeah, right. How are you, Arthur? You would been onto the Twitterverse. Shit, what an awful word.
Are you one of the Twitterati?
Of Amirin Z. And the podcaster of the same name. And
yes.
Too Political, which is you and a friend back in the mother country.
That's right.
And there are others, aren't there?
Well, my main other one is called Arthur and Paul Talk, which is just a chat show with a friend of mine from the US who is a veteran podcaster. He's been podcasting since 2004 or 2005. He's one of the originals, anyway.
Since the Labour Party invented blogging,
and since Ricky Gervais started podcasting.
Yeah, that is veteran status. That's almost antique status.
Well, in the podcast world, that makes him pretty much like he's a Civil War veteran. Podcast standards.
Well, there aren't that many podcasts in New Zealand. Most of them that exist are commercial, radio shows that are sent out as podcasts.
Yeah,
there at any given moment, there's only a couple of independent podcast producers in the whole country. Yeah. So we're unique. We are.
I think that's probably why people put up with us, actually. The long pauses and being drunk.
Yeah, it's the old New Zealand tradition of natural monopolies occurring and just delivering substandard service to the masses. This is. A proud tradition that we're carrying on our show.
All that's missing is the corporate welfare, actually.
Because you use podcasting to a number of ends. There's journal aspects to your podcasting.
Yep.
There's keeping up with your friends, and then there's the discussing of issues. And it's a good medium for that.
Yeah, well, I still think it's a bit like radio in some ways, because it's the power of the human voice telling stories. And the ones that I personally find the most interesting are where people are either talking together or where it's individuals telling their story.
Right.
One of my favorite podcasts is one called What Some Would Call Lies. And it's a guy who's basically recounting stories from his life, from his past in particular, but from a kind of creative perspective, and he doesn't necessarily vouch for them all being necessarily literally true. But things like that. But the advantage of podcasts over radio is that you can, the time shifting, you can play it whenever you want, wherever you want. You can be out weeding the garden or doing whatever, and you can listen to these
on
shows
a date.
And I think it's just a great medium
on a date to it once while you're driving. There's there's all sorts of, they're cracking down on podcasting while driving the other day with the Blitz. But yeah, I mean, I like it. If it weren't for podcasting, we'd still be doing exactly the same thing, just with less capital outlay. So in some ways, it's irreparably harmed my life.
What we originally, of course, did was decided to record the conversations we were having at the pub, and obviously. It cost me significantly less because all of the gear is Dave's, and we're no longer paying bar prices.
Mm.
That was pretty much,
yeah.
Okay. So I'm winning here, really.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, one thing I've always wondered.
Oh, yeah.
Because I came into your podcast after it had already been going for a while.
Right.
A little while anyway.
Yes, I am single.
We'll forgive you.
Well, I bet there are other listeners of yours who are in the same situation. I wonder, where does the name come from?
Well, there was a little bit of a cringe about how arrogant an outfit we were going to be, and how and just how much of ourselves we were going to put into it. And so,
and as it turned out, it became very arrogant.
Yeah. So like... I don't know. There's a very closely behind Let's Do a Podcast is it suggests that everyone hears our views on everything. Which is, quintessentially egotistical, and I was reading a copy of the Economist in the week that we decided to get going on this, and Yeah. You've seen me on Twitter just making up, you know, one letter change puns as my bread and butter. So
Among other things.
Here we are. Yeah. Well, you're too kind, but yeah, it is mostly that. So you moved from America, the USA, to New Zealand. And I mean,
yep.
That makes sense.
As a Kiwi, I of course have to ask you over and over again, almost in an almost panicked way, what do you think of New Zealand?
Well, now,
just generally, elevator pitch. What do you think?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because just the other day I was talking with my partner Nigel, and I was saying that I've lived here now for 17 years, and I don't think I could live in the U.S. anymore.
Right.
The country that I left isn't the country that's there now. So much has changed, and that's not all bad stuff. You know, there's some good stuff that's happened as well, a lot of good stuff, but.
Good TV.
It's just that it's completely different. Everybody I knew there has aged, surprisingly. And it's just, it's completely different.
Yeah.
And I'm used to things here now. I'm used to being able to never carry cash with me and use FPOS wherever I go.
Yeah, that sucks in America so much.
It does.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they put up with that.
Like ornate money clips and credit cards. Yeah, and massive credit card debt, but certain archaic conventions of that America. I mean, but we are talking about a nation that clings to the imperial system, so
true,
I think that
true.
We have to scale our expectations, you know, with regards to currency.
Yeah, well, I started out before the podcast. I was just blogging, and I used to always put these snarky references in my blog to the old-fashioned American system of measurements.
That's fantastic. Whereabouts in America are you from? Are you
originally from the Chicago area?
Oh, nice.
As a matter of fact, I lived in Chicago just before I came to New Zealand. I lived there for about 13 years.
Nice. Yeah. So obviously, that's were you aware of the city's reputation for civic politics? At the time, I mean, is it
all house
which,
music?
Which Chicago's or?
Yeah, Chicago. I
oh,
guess.
Heck yeah!
Yeah, it's on Front Street there.
Oh yeah, I grew up actually about an hour ish north of Chicago, in an area that is very white, very Republican.
Is it Aurora?
And it was an interesting place. Well, still is an interesting place. But my dad used to talk about how Richard J. Daley, who was mayor of the city of Chicago from 1954 or something to 1976-ish,
shit,
somewhere in there, how he had stolen the election for John F. Kennedy, and they had taken voting machines and thrown them in the Chicago River. Well, I don't know that any of that's true. In fact, I kind of doubt that it is.
But the Illinois conspiracy is almost as pervasive as the other conspiracies around JFK. But because I've heard, you know, he'd never been president if his daddy hadn't bought him Illinois.
Well, also the other thing is, well, I mean, the dailies cast a big pall over Democratic politics in general as well. You know, there's all the rumors that the Kennedys were shit scared of them.
Yeah, Chicago's reputation is probably largely undeserved nowadays.
Really?
It's changed a lot over the past 30 years, basically since the election of Harold Washington as mayor. He was the city's first African-American mayor, and it really changed everything.
Yeah.
And it's never been quite the same since then. Actually, with the death of Richard J. Daley, his machine pretty much crumbled away afterwards, and it sort of led to the... I don't know, it created the opportunity for change that probably wouldn't have happened if he hadn't died, to be honest.
Right. Well, if the thought that perhaps these people weren't aging and therefore immortal, we could have been seeing a nasty sort of Highlander.
Well, I mean, the other thing was, you say that the machine sort of fell away, but I mean, what did it in New York? Was shifting demographics of people anyway that weren't necessarily didn't know their livelihoods or weren't wedded to the, you know, the Democratic clubs, and because they weren't wedded to necessarily institutionalized politics in general. So that didn't happen in Chicago, was it? Just because the dynasty ended?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it wasn't really necessary because Chicago was so overwhelmingly Democratic anyway.
Yeah.
They didn't really need to have a machine to get people to go to go vote because they were going to vote Democratic anyway. To be a Republican in Chicago is kind of an unusual and rare thing. They just, they except certain pockets here and there,
right.
They just don't do very well.
Well, and what connection, I mean, obviously the most famous Chicago politician that the world knows about is Barack Obama. What yeah. connection, if any, did he come up after the machine era? The sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think he arrived, I don't remember the dates anymore, but I think it was well after that time. I think Richard M. Daley, the right. first one's son,
yeah.
was mayor at the time. In fact, I know he was. And so he got his start as the infamous community organizer and then eventually entered politics, was elected to the Illinois legislature, and then ultimately to the U.S. Senate. But that was well after the machine era was over. Now, I should say there are people who dispute my saying that the machine is dead. They would say, oh, no, it's very much alive.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. But I think that's really quite dependent on where it is.
Right.
There's some areas of the city that it's just old guard and the old machine is still functioning, but large parts of the city, it's changed too much. Some of those demographic things you were talking about earlier happened in Chicago, especially gentrification.
Yeah.
And that changed a lot of things. So the machine doesn't exist in the way that it did. Maybe it exists in some areas. And I actually think it was a very little help for Barack Obama in 2008 or 2012.
And also, I suppose, I mean, the idea of the democratic machine is almost as partisan, you know, doublespeak as, you know, the deep South.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a large number of the people that you hear talking about the democratic machine are talking about are on Fox News and things like that. So.
Exactly. Well, some of the same people on Fox News were talking about things that also didn't exist, like this supposed conspiracy from Acorn to steal elections and stuff.
Oh, right.
That didn't exist. The new Black Panther Party, that was two guys. I mean, come on. So you got to consider the source. These are people who wouldn't know a fact if it came up and bit them on the bottom.
Well, this is actually interesting because I one of the things that sort of seems to have fallen out from the election was just how out of touch the Fox News echo chamber was with
yeah,
what was going to happen.
It.
And that
even after it had happened,
yeah.
Karl Rove.
But wider than that, a certain type of conservative, who many of whom had a fair amount of, you know, sway, were basically believing the cyclical bullshit.
Yeah.
And I mean, because I was interested, I've been sort of thinking about this a bit, like, where to next for the Republicans?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
One of the people who's actually been, I think, has been following this the best is MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
Yeah,
ah,
she's cool.
Been doing a stellar job.
I read a really interesting book by her.
Drift?
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's actually funny, which I thought was like for that sort of book, obviously about the growth of the American military, the commercial military machine, wouldn't be a subject you'd think you'd get a lot of humor out of.
Yeah. Well, she manages to infuse it into her show, which obviously we don't get MSNBC here in New Zealand, so I subscribe to her show as a podcast,
right.
And as a audio podcast, because the video ones are like 200 megabytes each or something.
Yeah, forget that.
And I don't want to use up my data caps on that.
Not until the mega cable, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although we're not even on the list for the ultra-fast broadband.
No. Yeah.
So whereabouts are you based in New Zealand, if you don't mind me asking?
It, in Auckland, but in the area called Birkdale, which is in the old North Shore city.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I know the area. North Shore.
Well, most of the 17 years that I've been in New Zealand, we've lived in this general area. We've changed houses, but we had a 3 or 4 year time in Pairoa between.
Oh, right.
So I've been around a little bit.
Yeah. So you moved over out of love?
Yes, that's exactly it.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned before your partner Nigel, was that?
Yep.
And so one of the topics that I've been, you know, seeing you engage with on Twitter quite and on your podcast is the marriage equality debate that's happening kind of concurrently in either countries. I guess the most important question is, is New Zealand up to speed?
Well, it's a funny thing because there was a point there where, this is many years ago now, I thought that New Zealand was going to be the first in the world or close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
it wouldn't be against type as well.
Exactly.
I mean, something that we are proud about when it suits us.
Exactly. Well, yeah, when it suits us. But somebody stumbled somewhere, lost their nerve. I'm not quite sure what it was. But be that as it may, you know, they did the civil unions, which was an important step. But there's two things about the civil union. The first is that you'll hear the conservative opponents now saying that gay people asked for the civil unions bill and why aren't they satisfied with that? Well, gay people didn't ask for the civil
union. No one knew what one was, actually, up until, until the policy speak was spun onto it.
Exactly. Yeah. It was imposed, you could say, from well-meaning people, no doubt. But there was no consultation process with the wider LGBT communities throughout New Zealand to say, well, is this what you want? No. Well, I don't know. So it sort of came out of nowhere. But, and that's actually one of the things I think that has been irritating me the most lately with the conservative opponents, because one of the attacks they take is, they've got civil unions. Why isn't that enough?
Yeah, why aren't you satisfied with the scraps of the table? When the when the civil union legislation came through, I don't know. Maybe it's me being starry eyed and hopeful, but I sort of saw it as a step.
Yeah.
That obviously there is this resistance from vested interests that just don't get real life to the point where they not only believe in God, but then take his word. So there's that you're up against. Yep. So this was a stepping stone, a horrible piece of moral relativism that we swallowed in order to establish a beachhead. So why aren't gay people happy with just that?
Exactly.
I can't figure it out. I have a civil union. My wife and I opted not to be married until we all are, which is something I...
One thing, of course, that did happen, in 2004, when this was being... debated in the sort of weird compromise was reached, was there was a lot of conservative opposition and a lot of it very nasty. And in 1985-86, when the prostitution law reform bill became law, and in
86-87, you meant the homosexual law reform
bill was passed into law. Yeah. There was a lot of very nasty and violent opposition
from some people who are still in the house.
It's been at first reading stage. I was actually surprised by some of the people that voted for it more than the ones that vote more. I mean, I was expecting the ones that voted against it to vote against it.
Yeah, that was on kind of Front Street a long way away.
But I was just surprised at those that voted for it first reading, and I don't know for what reasons or how ingenuous that is. Is the opposition to it, do you think, going to get nastier, or has that conservative opposition been marginalised?
I think we've seen some of the nastiest that they can get already.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. I don't really think that they've got much left, because they have, if you pardon the expression, they've shot their wad.
Yeah. Well, they, with Colin Craig and his crowd.
Exactly. They've pulled out everything they've got. They have said that we're that gay people are immoral, that we're sick, that we don't deserve this. That's 1950s kind of talk, and it just doesn't play in the 21st century.
Well,
they've tried to shift their language to other things, talking about how civil unions should be enough. And they keep talking about children as if the only purpose of marriage is procreation, when everybody knows that's not true.
Yeah.
And they try all kinds of things. Their latest obsession is the religious exemption, which they insist must be included in the bill.
It has been since
because they want an extra right to discriminate. They already have the right to discriminate, but they want extra rights to discriminate.
Well, churches don't have to marry anyone. I mean,
exactly. John Key was not married in a church.
Yeah.
He and Bronno were married in a garden because she's Catholic. His mother was Jewish. They couldn't marry in a Catholic church, so they married in a garden, which, by the way, is not a marriage in the eyes of the Catholic Church, because any marriage that happens outside is not a Catholic marriage.
Yeah. And the thing is that the churches, you know, haven't bothered to make that battle an issue on any of their other little prejudices for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas it seems to be applied time and time again with relation to marriage equality, whereas there's, you know, forgetting that these churches have excluded people for a number of reasons the whole time.
Yeah.
So you actually think that they've, as you say, shot their wad. There's nothing more that they can say, because the reason I bring it up is that in 2004, you know, we had the rise of, you know, Destiny Church and some of these more kind of extreme whack job, some would say US style evangelical churches, very, you know, very young, very angry, if you like. And, you know, I remember at the time thinking that this mirrors, you know, the worst aspects of, you know, Midwest America, it's a flyover state America. I mean, I kind of thought that this might have, I've kind of believed that this has died a death. I think it was a product of a time.
And time is, everything's moved on. Mm. The fact that that marriage equality won 4 out of 4 battles in the U.S. in the most recent elections shows that times have changed. Yeah. Saturday, our time, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not they're going to take up 2 different marriage equality cases. One is on the potential striking down of the Defense of Marriage Act, which means that any marriage of a same-sex couple cannot be recognized for any federal purpose, including immigration, taxes, inheritance, any federal purpose.
Right.
And the other is the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8, which took away marriage equality in that state. Now, of course, in that case, no matter what the Supreme Court does, it's likely to be a huge victory.
Right.
Because if they decide not to review the case, then it stands as unconstitutional. It's overturned and marriages will resume. I think they said, well, if they announce that on Saturday, our time, by December, apparently, they're going to resume marriages.
So the day after tomorrow.
Yeah. But if they do decide to review the case, they could strike it down and establish a precedent for striking down all state constitutional amendments of that kind.
Now, this is when Obama came out and said, look, I believe in marriage equality, and I believe it's an idea that's time has come. But has said, you know, by the nature of the way that states' law work, there's not something that the executive branch can really do about this. But this is what for those of us right here who don't and may never ever completely understand the three branches of U.S. government, this is the type of action that he's talking about can bring it about, or, you know, exacerbate it.
Well, I actually it's very seldom that you can point to an event that happened and say that was the moment where everything changed.
Right.
And the moment where everything changed was when Barack Obama said, I support marriage equality. Mm-hmm. Because within days, you had David Shearer being clear that he supported marriage equality.
Yeah.
You had John Key saying, I support marriage equality, when he voted against civil unions.
Mm-hmm.
And that really started the momentum for change here as well as in other countries. Now, Australia is having its own issues because it's got two fuckwits as their party leaders.
Yeah, well, this is the funny thing about Julia Gillard. It baffles people that our people in Australia.
Gillard is tough because, I mean, this year she's probably been more visible to New Zealanders than ever before, and she did that fucking stormer of a sit down, shut up speech to Tony Abbott. Within 2 meters of him. That was amazing. And an
open-ended slap to misogyny, basically.
Yeah, and it's calculated a lot about what people thought about what had been the MO of a lot of male politicians facing female politicians and that kind of privilege within it. And she does these things, which elevated her to, you know, a hero status for a day. And then there's the, you know, the you know, beneficiary cuts and the her religious aspects, I believe it is. She gets God involved in all the stuff. But I mean, trying to be satisfied by an Australian politician is, you know, that's an exercise in futility.
Yeah, I mean,
that's sort of a hopeless cause.
Standing next to Tony Abbott, anyone takes on a saintly quality.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy seems to combine the right mixture of nastiness. It seems to be the only human emotion he expresses is nastiness, yeah. which is actually an achievement, I think.
Well, I mean, it's purity of message. The Labor Party's been trying to do something similar, just along different lines, for many years. But enough of Australia, which is a country none of us come from. How did you like the election, Obama?
Sorry?
How did you like the election result?
It was better than I hoped. And on the day of the election, the day before as well, I was actually, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was really a nervous wreck.
Right.
Because I was thinking, what if the Romney people aren't lying and they really are ahead in the polls? What if they manage to steal the election again?
Yeah.
What if, you know, all this sort of thing.
Well, I remember seeing you on Twitter and there seemed to be a real genuine feeling amongst a lot of Americans that, you know, this could be the worst thing.
And I really don't think, I didn't think at the time that enough people understood what could happen if that crowd got in control. It was the most extreme ticket ever nominated by an American political party in the entire history of the United States, unless you talk about some fringe.
The sort of Dixiecrats or something.
Or the, what was George Wallace's party, the American Independent Party or whatever it was called. Yeah, apart from them, of the two main parties, it was the most extreme ticket ever nominated. And a lot of people didn't really grasp exactly how extreme they were. And I just saw all sorts of disaster looming if they got elected. And when we were watching CNN, when they projected that Obama had won, naturally I let out a whoop. And then at that moment, I realized how much stress I'd been under, because I just felt like the entire weight of the world had been lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
Because I was really thinking to myself, what am I going to do if Romney wins? Because I don't even know if I'm even going to be able to get back into the U.S. again if he had been elected. So, I mean, there are all of these kinds of questions going through my head because, you know, you don't want to mess around with fascists.
Well, and I suppose, you know,
it's all fun and games until everyone loses everything they have.
Well, I mean, New Zealanders, as we were sort of dispassionate observers, and we make it a point that, you know, you're elected president, you're president of the world. But, I mean, seeing Americans that I knew, and whether it was a knife edge or not, the possibility of Romney and, you know, being elected was just too awful. For the very fabric of what they know as American society.
But then we ended up getting rid of Romney. We ended up defeating those whacked out Republicans with their ideas about rape and all that sort of stuff.
That was charmers.
And the increased return of women to the Senate.
Absolute record number. The Democratic caucus in the Senate for the first. Sorry, the House. Mm. Is it the House or Senate? The House, for the first time ever, is majority non-white male.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Compare and contrast that to the picture doing the rounds at the moment of the Republican Party's, I think it's the name you give the
GOP.
Yeah, obviously I know that. But the, what you'd give the equivalent of the shadow cabinet or the...
House. It's probably the leadership, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's a photo of... exclusively white male.
What a lot of people don't know too is that the Republicans took control of state legislatures in 2010. They redistricted the things, the states, and if it hadn't been for that, the Democrats would control the U.S. House as well.
Wow. Right. Okay.
That's how big the election was for Democrats this year.
that seems to, and I mean, for all the hot air that has come off, I mean, we have by design of the system, we get so much of these motherfuckers in our face with the primaries and the RNC and you know, everything they do as a news event, and especially with Romney because he was so hilariously bad at it, that I at least got tricked, well, not tricked, but, you know, worried that he represented something that had more of a hook in the real politic of America than he actually did. And God damn, it's amazing. I mean, even Weed got elected.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
Do you think that it's also the spells the end of the mainstream acceptance of that sort of the wacky the mainstream acceptance of certain libertarianisms? Because, I mean, obviously, people like Paul Ryan and...
Well, Paul Ryan's not a legitimate libertarian. He's just kind of a whack job. he has no intellectual heft whatsoever. I mean, he's regarded as intellectual in the Republican Party, but that's because they have so few. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, most of them have trouble walking and chewing gum at the same time. But...
he's read Atlas Shrugged, then, basically.
Yeah, well, anybody... Well, don't get me started on that one. But I actually think the future of the Republican Party, if it survives, will be as a libertarian party. A small government, limited government, individual rights sort of thing.
Which is what
if they continue down this road of allowing the religious nut jobs to run their party, they're doomed to failure, because the only people that appeals to are old white men, and they're dying off. And so the greatest enemy that the Republican Party faces is not Democrats. It's time. The longer that they go down this road, the more likely they are to face oblivion.
Yeah. And in some ways, that's a nice swan song for conservatism in general. Unless you can get new conservatives.
Well, yeah. It happens. If they keep rapping and releasing novelty music videos the way they've been doing, then maybe it won't. But I don't know if, like, it's never, ever a done deal to celebrate the end of a horrible ideology. I don't know. I'm optimistic about the direction, but the long term, the dragon is slain. I don't know. Well, the demographic issue.
And as you say, none of those Republicans were really ideological libertarians anyway.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them just went down that road because it appealed to the base and they didn't really question it too much, but now they are.
Well, they wrap religion in it as well, which is something that libertarianism doesn't. It was obviously a pleasing outcome for the rest of the world.
Because
Mitt Romney's, you know, ham-fisted approach to to foreign affairs, which of course, you know, it matters. The US's role in the world matters to the world and to the US.
Well, but I mean, you know, some things change, some things stay the same. Israel kicking off wasn't cool for anyone to see, and I mean, there are two countries that could stop that. But I see what you mean. The flagrant antagonism of the Republicans whenever they've got the reins is poison for the planet.
So another sort of fevered question, because as a culturally cringing insecure New Zealander, is will you stay in New Zealand?
I imagine I will, but the fact that I came here in the first place, I try never to say never now, because I mean, if somebody had asked me in 1994, will you move to the other side of the world? I would have laughed at them and told them they were nuts. And then in 1995, that's exactly what I did. So I never say never, but I would say that moving back to the US or anywhere else for that matter is in the highly improbable category.
For sure. Well, obviously I think you're a credit to the nation, and best off hanging around here.
Yeah, I think so too.
Sounds good. Yeah, we'll raise the podcasting industry.
Exactly.
From these humble beginnings to the monolith that she'll become.
Yes,
exactly.
With I think a helping hand from government.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Don't let anyone tell you government can't change things. Government can fund microphones, servers, developers,
fast food,
booze. Yeah. Government can intervene in getting you booze pretty easily. That's all you need in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Arthur, it's been fantastic talking to you.
It's been great.
Sorry, we have to do a short one, but I have to run off. But we should do this again sometime. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Maybe as the marriage equality story develops in either nation, yeah, we can compare notes and treat it as some sort of competitive sporting
well, that's a good idea because the US doesn't play rugby and New Zealand doesn't play baseball, although both are learning.
We can compete on this. This will be our World Cup.
Exactly.
Good stuff. Take us out of here, Dan.
Dan.
Dave.
Arthur.
That was The Economist.
That's terrible.
Guest. I like that.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.